Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
And you are welcome along to Wednesday Night Rugby. We're live on all our social channels and platforms, and our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone, Team of Us, Everyone In. And I'm joined by Rory O'Connor, resident Bohemians fan, of course. We should probably mention the latest effort Bohs have made before we get into rugby to just become like the coolest club ever.
Yeah, the press conference with Natty Whaler from the Whalers today to keep the Bob Marley team going. They're doing a gig at the in May.
And Vicar Street.
In Vicar Street. So just being cool again, you know, just another day in Bohs.
Natty, PJ Gallagher and Bruce Shields among the luminaries.
Oh yeah, like all the greats.
We're here to talk rugby though.
We are.
There's so much to talk about. I don't know where to start, but Joey Carby, I was reading your piece today. You had a piece in the Irish Independent just that... maybe he was at one stage deemed to be something of an heir apparent at Leinster, and your piece makes the point that it now looks unlikely he'll ever play for
Leinster. Well, I mean, I did make the point as well, never say never in professional rugby because things change so quickly. He signed a new two-year deal which extends his current deal effectively by another year. It's funny, just looking back, you know, a year ago this wasn't even on the cards. You know, Joey Carbery was part of the Leinster fabric, you know, part of their future. He was regularly involved. The story about him going, you know, him or Ross Byrne, potentially, it was probably Ross Byrne was probably the more likely one, going to Ulster, didn't break until the day of the European Cup semi-finals last year. So, you know, 12 months ago today, this wasn't even on anyone's radar. Fast forward 12 months, and he is bought into the Munster project to such a degree that he's willing to commit 3 years of his career to them. And it's hard to see how he comes back to Leinster from here, or you know what would change to make him want to come back at this stage.
So Sexton getting older,
but Ross Byrne is there. Leinster have had to move on. They'll have to plan without him. I presume Leinster are not planning. Like when it first got announced a year ago, it was done very strangely. It broke the morning of a press conference before Ireland went to Australia, and then Carbery actually walked into the room to do the press conference that day and sat down and said, you know, I just want to, you know, talk, say that
I just should mention this.
I'm moving to Munster next season, and he was really, it was really reluctant stuff. He talked about how tough the decision had been, how much he'd enjoyed playing for Leinster, but
it's almost, you know, like being sent in the army overseas.
It was almost out of obligation, and within weeks of him moving, we were starting to hear that he had enjoyed the move so much, so quickly that, you know, he was kind of in it for the long term. He got welcomed his debut off the bench at Tumman Park. He got a massive roar coming on his debut in Irish Independent Park in Cork. He got a standing ovation coming off the pitch. He's probably been the best, you know, one of their best players this season. He's been an unbelievable signing in addition to the Munster team. He's kind of the missing link to what they had. And he's, you know, he's been backed as the starting 10. He started all their big games that he's been fit for. You know, if he comes through training this week, he'll start a European quarterfinal for them, which is exactly what he moved for. But it looks like he's fit in really well down there, which is probably, you know, any time you move to a new job, a new club, that's going to be a concern, especially when you are quite, you know, you've come through the ranks at Leinster, that's all you've known. That's probably what he was a bit kind of wary of when he moved. So it's worked out really well for him. It's really worked out really well for Munster, and it's worked out really well for Irish rugby, because we saw the last time an Irish team went to Murrayfield, Sexton went down midway through the first half, Carbery came on and managed Ireland to the game, and that
was what might have been of the campaign, in that he got injured, and like after his wobbly first half, you're like, this is the Joey Carbery that really could be a star for Ireland, and then he gets injured.
Yeah, and you wonder with Sexton struggling so much. I mean, Sexton had a very good game against France, but you wonder in Cardiff, had, you know, Jack Carty had only had very limited opportunity, but he did really well during those opportunities, but he doesn't have the trust that Joey Carbery has built up over his 20-odd caps. So would Schmidt have turned to Carbery quicker than he did to Carty and sent him on earlier in Cardiff? You know, maybe that was a bit of a poison chalice anyway. I mean, Carty came on and did well, but he was only on for 8 or 9 minutes. So yeah, it was disappointing. I think he probably would have started one of those games. You know, Schmidt was using the Six Nations to try and get as many, you know, to spread the load a little bit and build towards the World Cup. But what's undoubted is that Joey Carbery has a role to play in Ireland's World Cup campaign.
Could he start?
He'll start one or two of the games. I think if it's a quarterfinal, unless Sexton's form doesn't pick up at all and he continues, like if Sexton continues to play the way he played against Wales, you know, it's a different conversation. But I don't, you know, there's too much, there's too much of a body of work there to suggest that he will bounce back, and he could bounce back against Ulster on Saturday. But Carberry is getting closer and closer to a place where he's definitely going to be pushing him, and a place where he can come on with 20 minutes of an international, even if Sexton's going well, and change the game.
See, like, Sexton could be entering into the territory of the Ireland, Rory Best, who basically comes off late on, and you're like, well, expect Carberry to come on.
It doesn't happen as much with your decision-making backs. I mean, it happens more with the forwards because of the work rate they put in and the burden that it has on their body. But Sexton is a player who does tend to pick up niggly injuries. He plays through them an awful lot. But, I think we saw in the Munster-Leinster game when Sexton kind of went after Carberry a little bit, and there was verbals, there was a bit of afters after a couple of incidents, that maybe Carberry's got into his head a little bit. So he's seeing him as more of his genuine rival. And, you know, Irish rugby loves an out-half rivalry, going back to Campbell and Ward and probably before that. You can only play one out-half. Well, I mean, Carberry's a guy you can come on a full-back and do a job.
No, that's
a
really big job.
Probably, but I think when you've got a guy on the bench, he can come on anywhere and affect the game, because, you know, anyone can go down at any time. And I like the idea of, like, Beauden Barrett for New Zealand in 2015 was the heir apparent to Dan Carter, but they were happy enough to let him come on and change the game. You know, Carberry's not as quick as Barrett, but he's a really exciting attacking player and offers something different from 15. You'd like to see them use him a bit more.
Was that a mistake that Schmidt made in the campaign, that we, like, 15 was a problem for us throughout the Six Nations? Yes, Carberry, when he obviously wasn't fit for the remainder, but he could have feasibly given us an extra attacking dimension that we just don't seem to have.
I think if Ian Madigan or Paddy Jackson were not unavailable for selection, he would probably look at Carberry in different ways. But because Carberry is, until Carty, you know, proved himself worthy of being considered, and you know, Ross Byrne has gone out of it, but is also, you know, getting a fair, you know, reasonable amount of experience. But Carberry is, he basically has two out halves that he trusts, and I think he just thinks that Carberry, every minute Carberry has on the pitch with Ireland should be in the number 10 slot, because every minute he gets, the more he learns, and he doesn't want to mess around with that. But I think if he's playing a World Cup quarter final and Sexton's going well, kicking his goals, and he needs to change the game or he needs a change of pace, it is an option for him. And it allows him to make different decisions around his bench as well, because Carberry covers those different positions.
How important is the coaching staff at Munster in this decision?
It must be. You know, you can only, like, everyone at Munster signed on for another 2 years or another couple of years this season. All the news out of Munster, you know, they lost Dunnock Ryan 2 seasons ago, they lost Simon Zeebo last year, both really important homegrown players. Their internationals have generally all signed on, but this year it's been, you know, pretty much contract extension after contract extension. Their squad will be the same going into next year. You know, they might make out one or two more. We haven't had any announcements yet, but that is a vindication of the work that Van Graan, that Felix Jones, Gerry Flannery and JB Ferreira are doing at Munster, quietly improving them. I mean, I think they are capable of going on a win in the European Cup this year, which I didn't really believe they could last year or the year before, largely due to the addition of Tadhg Byrne and Carberry. But they need their players to stay fit. But, you know, players wouldn't be committing their futures there if they didn't believe that they could win things and if they didn't believe in this coaching ticket.
Before we talk about the weekend, some obviously fascinating games, there's news about Ronan O'Gara and Paul O'Connell. Obviously, we've Ronan on regularly on Off the Ball. But what does the future hold for these two? Because it's just going to be intriguing one way or the other.
Well, you mentioned the Munster coaching position, and the conventional wisdom is that one day the future holds a role together at Munster. I mean, O'Gara talked about it a couple of seasons ago when he was at Racing, how he'd love to come back with O'Connell, and they kind of don't really talk about it publicly anymore. But I think, you know, long term, a lot of Munster fans would like to see that. But, you know, right now Johan Van Graan has the job and there's no reason to move on from him. So what they're doing is they're going around the world and they're building experience. And, you know, O'Gara is building an unbelievable CV, you know, to work at Racing under the two Laurens, the coaches there, who have basically made them a consistent force in European and French rugby, winning the Bouclier de Branou and getting to two Champions Cup finals, one of them when O'Gara had moved on, and then going down to the Crusaders, the market leaders in club rugby in the Southern Hemisphere under Scott Robertson, who many believe is going to be the next All Blacks coach, working with the All Blacks pack pretty much. They're all in, pretty much all Crusaders. Richie Mwanga, really good 10 and a backline that's capable of opening up any team, and he's coaching their attack. He's just building and building his experience post one of the most impressive playing careers we've ever had in Ireland. So, you know, O'Gara's next step is whether he comes back to Europe or not. And obviously there is,
Well, this,
you know,
is
strong
reports.
Talk that he will be part of the French coaching ticket at the World Cup.
Midi Olympique reporting that his short-term appointment as France's defence coach in Jacques Brunel's struggling setup will run from July until after the World Cup.
And he told Joe on Monday that's probably jumping the gun, that he had contact from an agent. So I think there's obviously merit to the story. There's obviously something there. Personally, I'd like to see the RFU come in and hijack the move. I'd like to see him involved with Ireland. I think, you know, that experience that
he has.
I think just as an assistant, you know, I mean, whether...
And that's still up in the air.
Well, the Irish coaching team is pretty solid. It's been the same since Andy Farrell came on board. Greg Feek has gone back to New Zealand after the World Cup, as well as Joe Schmidt. But Ireland looked like a setup that could do with a fresh idea, fresh voice during the Six Nations. The two halfbacks are playing poorly. O'Gara was, you know, a rival to Sexton, turned a coach and confidant during his time in Paris. And
Conor Murray
was once his halfback partner. He knows those two players really, really well. He's been working with the league with the best unstructured attack in the world, and that's what Ireland will be missing, is that kind of unstructured play. He can get it, you know, he can take the pressure off Andy Farrell on the defensive side, he can work on the skills. I mean, we hear there's no egos within the Irish setup, you know, like if people aren't worried about toes being stepped on, why not get him in? I mean, what like having a legend like O'Gara in your setup at a pivotal time, he's worked in the setup before on the tour of America a couple of years ago. He said he dropped into them in Chicago last November when they were over there for the Italy game. I just, you know, personally, if you know, why let this asset that, you know, I would say at the drop of a hat he would sign on for this. Why let this asset go to France? You know, he's clearly in demand. He's clearly worth something. You know, whether Schmidt thinks that what he has is fine, he probably does. But I just think that would be great. But
not,
you know,
Schmidt's call though, or is it Schmidt's call?
It would be Schmidt's call. Yeah, no, it's his coaching ticket, and he and David Nussafour will make those decisions together.
You think he could bring O'Gara in potentially?
I don't think he will, but I just think he should. I think O'Gara will probably be with France, judging by, you know, the old no smoke without fire law, and the French media don't often get these things wrong. They're often very well briefed, and I think from his perspective, it's a no-brainer. You know, having that experience I've talked about already, then go to a World Cup, and, you know, it's not going to be on him if it doesn't go right. And the experience of being in that pressurised environment for 6 weeks with a good bunch of players who are clearly really talented, clearly really young, a young halfback pairing who he can mentor, trying to get a tune out of that defence that, you know, defence they say is the easiest thing to fix, and he's a really good level of expertise in that regard. So I think if it's on the table, and if, you know, there's potential, you know, it doesn't clash with the Super Rugby season, so if he wants to stay with the Crusaders, he could come back, do that, and then go back to the Crusaders. Obviously, he's a young family, there's all sorts of things at play. His contract with the Crusaders is up at the end of this Super Rugby season. It's been a one-year deal rolling so far. He may want to come back to Club Rugby. You know, you can ask him the next time he's in it himself. And then there's O'Connell, who's leaving Stade Francais at the end of the season and says he's not going to take up a role or doesn't envision himself taking up a role with another club.
What's happened there? Is just turned a bit sour?
It seems like there's a lot of cooks in that club. You know, Heineke Meyer took, the former Springboks coach, took over with a heavy South African influence within the coaching team. John McFarland, an Irish guy who ended up being a Springbok assistant, is in there with him. A couple of others. Mike Prendergast, former Munster scrum half, who's built a really strong coaching resume himself in France. And it seems like there's a lot of cooks. Maybe the atmosphere is not great behind there. You know, O'Connell hasn't talked about it publicly yet. He's just made this statement. Toulon was the one that people were talking about. That would be, you know, for a guy who, you know, so organised, so driven, Toulon's a bit of a basket case with the club owner being really, really influential. I'm not sure how well that would fit.
What are his other options?
It'd be a nice place to go. I don't think he's in any desperate need to work. You know, I think he could sit things out until the right opportunities come along. I think there's going to be a huge amount of movement in the coaching world after the World Cup. You know, a lot of the decisions have been taken.
Chairs.
Yeah, there is. Like, a lot of the coaches are finishing up. There's going to be slots opening up and coaching tickets across the world. I don't think you'd be short of offers. Having Paul O'Connell in as part of your ticket is really beneficial. And having spent that year in Paris will have done him the world good, even if it just opens him up. You know, he's a one-club player. He only ever played for Munster. Seeing how things work in a highly political environment in Stade Francais probably doesn't do him any harm into his next job. And it's all, you know, things work out, things don't work out. It's all part of the learning experience, because coaches, you know, it's a long career, and I think the former pros who've retired recently are aware of that and don't want to jump into top jobs right away.
Just briefly, before we get to the games of the weekend, Joe Schmidt, how much is his kind of legacy going to be sullied if the year kind of tails off as it just might based on the Six Nations?
I think his legacy will ultimately be defined by the World Cup performance. I don't think the Six Nations...
Ultimately defined by the World Cup?
I think so, because he will walk away Ireland's most successful coach regardless of what happens in Japan. So that, if that's his legacy, that is his legacy. He's won 3 Six Nations, 1 Grand Slam in 6 attempts. That's unbelievable. His win percentage, I don't have it on top of my head, but it's better than all of the other coaches that have gone before him. He will walk away regardless of what happens. But he had the chance to walk away in 2017, and he decided to stay on. Everything he's done in the last 3 years has been building towards this point and succeeding in Japan. And I think he would be disappointed. No one's going to say it's a failure. Like, it's not a failure. Like, it's been a remarkably successful period in Irish rugby. But at the same time,
you remember your last meal, I suppose.
What would differentiate him? Definitely, he won a Grand Slam. He wasn't as consistent, but he won a Grand Slam. Eddie O'Sullivan was unbelievably consistent through all of the Six Nations that Ireland finished second, won triple crowns from a lower base.
The World Cup.
Schmidt has taken. They've all got to the quarterfinal of the World Cup. To really, truly differentiate this Irish team and this Irish setup from other Irish setups would be to take that next step and reach the last 4 and maybe do more. And they're capable of doing it, and they're demonstrated with the consistency of 21 wins in 24 games, even though things have gone badly recently, that they can. So, I think it would tarnish it a bit, but, he would still walk away as, Ireland, to use an American phrase that I don't particularly like, winningest coach, So it doesn't ruin anything. He judges himself by high standards, and he stayed for this particular reason. Otherwise, I think he'd be back in New Zealand taking the break that he wants to take.
You mentioned Conor Murray. So what do we expect from Munster? Tough test in Edinburgh. And are these players going to automatically sort of discover their form?
I think we're all kind of hoping that the players will go back into their provincial environments, and the change of pace, the change of voice, the change of location will help them get over what was a very disappointing day in Cardiff. Whatever about the whole campaign, they started with a gut punch and they finished with a gut punch as well. So Murray and Sexton in particular are the ones I think people look at whose form. Sexton's form deserted him in Cardiff. I've just never seen him perform that way. Murray, I think, actually probably picked up as he went along, but still hasn't gone anywhere near the levels that we know he can reach. And Van Graan said on Monday, he was down at the press conference, that he expects him to get back to the standards that Munster fans know the reasons they know and love him, and the level of accuracy that he brings to everything he does. I just think his pass hasn't been as zippy as you might like, but I think he's going to have a really important role, because Edinburgh are a team who like to keep things tight. They're a team who go through it, the set piece, the kicking game. It's going to have to be on the money. Munster were in a really tough pool and did really well to get out of that pool, but what it did was they weren't able to pick up enough points that would give them that home quarter final that's been so beneficial to them. So they're going away to a crowd, they'll probably be at least a quarter of the crowd from Munster, if not a lot more. But still, you're talking about 40,000 in it's not the most intimidating of away venues, but you're still going away from home. It's a tough task. And
what do we expect from Carberry? He's obviously likely.
But
to
he
start.
Hasn't played since. He's going back to Murrayfield, having not played since that day when he's had a hamstring injury. So he probably hasn't had a huge amount of time on the pitch. But he's young. He's played an awful lot of rugby this year for Munster, so he knows the systems. He should be able to slot back in there. He has Murray to take the pressure off him. He has Chris Farrell outside him, who can do a lot of the dirty work if needs be. Even Rory Scannell can take over the kicking game and take a bit of responsibility off him, so he can probably ease his way in a little bit. But your hamstring's going to be tested no matter what. It probably won't be until the first 10, 15 minutes when he opens up and tries to sprint or puts a kick with a full extension in that he'll know that he's fully sure that he's okay.
Do you expect him to win?
I expect, I think they will, but I wouldn't say with any great amount of confidence. Munster in Europe have a remarkable record, but they generally do enough to get their home quarter final. It's one of the kind of the rules that Munster rugby live by in Europe over the years, and it's served them very, very well. So Edinburgh are a side reborn under Richard Cockerill. They don't play particularly attractive rugby, but they've got very dangerous players. Mata, the number eight, is one of the best ball carriers in Europe right now. Their winger Van der Merwe is, you know, really dangerous. They have a lot of Scottish internationals. They have the Scottish tie five. They'll put it up to Munster, and Munster will need to, like, a lot of players will need to find form that we haven't seen them for a while. And they'll have to try and play with a cohesiveness to fight, despite the fact they haven't been together for 2 months, which is a challenge for all the teams in this competition this week. So I wouldn't say, you know, there's no guarantees going over there. It wouldn't be a massive surprise if Edinburgh came out, even though I think fans would probably be a little bit shocked. I think Munster, you know, the Munster people I've spoken to this week are very wary of this fixture, and it's by no means a guarantee. It's early kickoff as well, which never suits anyone, but in Murrayfield, which can be a bit of a soulless place at times, Justin might not have that quarter-final edge that you come to expect, but I think they have enough quality to do it, and they have the players. Like, they have a pretty good injury record for this stage of the season, which is positive as well. So they've just got enough if they can just pull it all together, which is a challenge.
Later on Saturday, do we see the champions elected to the Aviva Stadium?
Not necessarily. We see the champions. I'm not sure if they're going to retain their crown, but I think Ulster are a bit away from being the team that stops them.
Talking like a 14-point handicap or something.
Right? Yeah, it's huge, and I can see why that is. But I think with the, like, there's going to be four or five Ulster players who are from Leinster in the starting 15, and if they don't have the motivation to come down to the Aviva Stadium against the province that, you know, apart from Geordie Murphy, kind of
surely that wouldn't be the case, though, would it?
What do you mean? If,
you know, they have a job to do for Ulster.
I mean it in terms of they're going to be unbelievably fired up. Mm. They'll have all of a point to prove. They are going to give the performance of their lives. You've got Rory Best, who, you know, he says he might carry on next season, but that doesn't guarantee him anything in terms of getting back to a quarter final, a once-off shot, getting to a semi, and, you know, maybe getting back to the holy grail that Ulster haven't been. You know, Ulster haven't been to the knockout since 2014. They got to the final in 2012. They know more than anyone else that these opportunities are hard-earned and don't come around very often. It's cup rugby, so if they can come down, it looks like Ian Henderson will be fit, Will Addison's not, that's a big blow to their attacking game. But if they can be physical, if they can rattle Sexton, if they can, you know...
Will they target Sexton?
Well, like, everyone targets the out half. You know, that's, like, they say they won't target Sexton because they're Ireland colleagues of his, but, you know, it will be remiss of them not to send Marcel Coetzee down Johnny Sexton's channel at some stage. You know, they probably won't go after late hits in the same way, but they saw how Munster's Finian Witcherly got under Sexton's skin. Like, if you don't try and get under Sexton's skin, you're not doing your job.
He's,
you know,
probably mentally a little bit wobbly at the moment as well.
Well, yeah, the last time we saw him, he was just looked at like a player who was at war with himself, and he was doing things that you just so uncharacteristic for Johnny Sexton, kicking the ball dead, mishitting drop-offs. I mean, he was interviewed in the Sunday Indo on Sunday, and he was saying to people, he was bringing his kids swimming, and kind of fellow parents were coming up and asking him, was he okay? So, I mean, it's getting through to him as well, and he's very mentally resilient. He wouldn't be the World Player of the Year if he wasn't, but he hasn't played well in 2019. What he did in 2018 is great and all, but he kind of needs to pull it together. He's the captain of the team. He'll feel a lot of responsibility this week in front of a big crowd at the Aviva Stadium. But we know he is so, so good. And it's always been the case that Leinster would back their pack to dominate Ulster, certainly in recent memory. And if they can get that front foot ball, if Luke Moran getting the ball on a silver platter, he should be able to dictate the play. And it would be a great way for him to wash away those Cardiff Blues by getting it back on track.
And just briefly, you're not going to be in Dalymount for sold out Bohemians against Pats. You're in my hometown, obviously Galway, Sale Sharks and Connacht.
No, it's away. I'm in Manchester.
You're in Sale, yeah. Rather. But this is a big test for Connacht.
It is. They played each other twice already in the pool stages. They, Sale won the home fixture. Connacht won the game in Galway. Both came out of the pool and ended up drawing each other. Sale have they're kind of reasonably safe in the Premiership in terms of they're chasing Europe probably, but they're probably not going to make the playoffs. So this is probably their last chance of silverware, and a club that probably don't win an awful lot, even though I think they've won this tournament before. But it is a big test. I think Connacht are fighting on two fronts, and this is a big test of their squad. You know, Bunyaki could come back in, which is huge for them. They have good players. They're riding the crest of a wave. They were very good in terms of digging out a result against the good Treviso side last Friday. This is a step up. There's, you know, Tom Curry is that was one of the stars of the Six Nations. He's probably going to be starting for Sale up against Paul Boyle, a young, promising player from Wexford who's kind of in his breakout season. They played against each other at under-20s. You know, there are players who will probably have to go above anywhere where they've been before, but that's what Cup Rugby Away From Home is about. And they've knocked on this door a couple of times and been close. Think Grenoble, they've been to Gloucester a couple of times. It would be lovely to see them take another step and maybe get a home semi-final and try and get to Newcastle to St James's Park for the final, because it's there for them if they want it. The problem is that they have another front, the Pro 14, which is possibly, they both lead to the same place, but I think it's more manageable to get there during the Pro 14, so I think Friend may rotate in that regard. But they can do it. I think the odds are against them a little bit, but they have the players, they have the weapons to score against anyone, and if they can front up in the pack and gain at least parity there, that they can do it.
Attractive town to visit, I'd say.
Sale, I've never been. It's my first trip to the AJ Bell. I think 7:45 kickoff, and then I have a 6:36 train to Edinburgh the next morning, so I don't think I'll see much of Manchester. I think we're it's all about the rugby this weekend, Johnny. Not too much sightseeing.
Thanks for coming in.
No worries, cheers.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.